Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
The Graham Norton Radio Show.
How exciting is this?
With Waitrose.
Over on Virgin Radio.
Up and at 'em, come on, things to do. Don't cheer, you'll just embarrass yourselves. We're not bored of it yet, so it's lovely. There's no stopping them. No stopping them.
The Graham Norton Radio Show.
Oh, there's nothing nicer, is there? Nothing nicer.
With Waitrose. Food to feel good about.
I mean, what's not to like?
Saturday and Sunday from 9:30.
Over on Virgin Radio.
Us, it's big intro time.
Our next guest has led Ted as head and written a book we've read. And he'll give us today our daily bread with his new book, Infectious Generosity, The Ultimate Idea, Worth Spreading, out now. So let's feel that bliss with Chris Anderson.
Good morning, Chris.
Good morning, Chris.
Great to meet you, man.
Well, it's lovely to be here.
So pleased you're here. I'm so pleased you've written this book. For people who don't know about you, can you give us a sort of mile high view of a little sort of potted history of your career, your life so far?
My parents were missionaries. I was born in Pakistan, grew up in Pakistan, India, Afghanistan, came to England, got educated, ended up becoming a journalist, and then got obsessed with computers, like obsessed, and started a company. It was a great time to make computer magazines. So I made a lot of those, went to America and made some more, and other specialist magazines. And then in the late 90s, discovered this crazy, weird conference called TED, kind of fell in love with it. Had a chance to buy it, which was a great thing because my company was blowing up in the dot-com crash of 2000, 2001.
Blowing up in a bad way.
In a bad way.
Yes.
Yes, yes. It's survived and is thriving again. It's called Future PLC. It's still here and I love it, but I'm no longer part of it. I did this sideways move to take over TED. As a non-profit, basically, but to grow it from one conference to sharing the stuff online.
All right, a couple of questions. Here we go, off the back of that response. Wasn't it an ironic time when there were lots of magazines about computers?
Well, it was. It was the only way. Before the internet, that was the only way you
could
find out about what was going on.
Which is so mad, because it's the opposite of what they're talking about.
No. Well, indeed. Indeed. And we probably should have seen the writing on the wall more clearly, that they were coming to eat us all.
And so then you get your first experience of TED. Mm. First of all, what does it stand for? When did you first hear the acronym TED?
Yeah, so it's technology, entertainment, and design. Mm-hmm. An odd mix, actually, you would think. And it was an attempt. It was a conference held in California to try and bring together those three industries. So it started actually way back in 1984, which was the year that the Apple Mac came out and the year that the first CDs were done. So if you think about that, there's technology, entertainment, and design wrapped up in them, and people were going, whoa, synergy. But the weird thing was that by having a conference where people have to speak to people outside their industry, it makes them talk a different way. They talk to explain.
Yes.
And they talk shorter. And so it was kind of amazing. Like it took you out of your world into a broader world of understanding. I find it super inspiring, as did a lot of other people.
So what was the blue touch paper that lit the explosion, which the likes of which the world has still not seen since, that became TED on YouTube, for example?
Well, it was basically YouTube. It was the arrival of online video,
yeah,
which seems like just another little technology, but it's actually quite profound when you think about it, because it's the first time that humans have been able to scale to an unlimited number of people. Anything that you can capture on video can now scale to countless millions, billions of people. So that was huge. And we found ourselves saying, oh my goodness, here we are. We've got this interesting content. We should probably share it with the world. And even though we were worried it might blow up the conference, because who would pay for a conference if the content was free? Yeah. But it turned out that by giving this stuff away, it was the best, not just like a nice move to make, it was the best business move you could actually make, because more people than ever were interested in the conference. And so it was actually that got me thinking, seeing these talks go viral and suddenly from a few hundred people visiting our website to millions, it really got me thinking, boy, the rules really have changed in this connected age. Like what you hold on to and what you should give away has changed. And so, and so that became our strategy. We gave away our brand, TEDx event, and let other people do TED events that we couldn't control, which was occasionally really embarrassing. Bad things happened, but not that many. Mainly, it was amazing. And there are now 3,000 events around the world. You know, you couldn't do an organization that runs 3,000 events around the world without going stark, staring bonkers.
And the initial explosion, which was an overnight, I mean, it was like a rocket, wasn't it, to the moon, that nobody had actually bothered to create or invent. It just sort of, for some reason, it took off under its own steam via 6 initial talks. Is that right?
Yeah, there were 6 initial talks were the experiment. And when we saw how people reacted to them, we thought, oh boy, we kind of need to give away all of our best.
What were the numbers
content
like there?
Well, the first sort of day or two after it, maybe 10,000 people were coming to the website instead of 1,000 or under 1,000. But it just relentlessly grew. I mean, they just continued to go viral. One of those first talks was by Sir Ken Robinson, a British educator. It's a wonderful, inspiring talk about education. And it was seen by 700 people live. And then today, 27 years later, it's still seen by several thousand people every day.
Every single day.
Yeah.
And you were in the millions of views pretty quickly, weren't you?
Yes. Yeah. And so it kind of, not with those first 6 talks, but the reaction to those first 6 talks told us that we had to give away all of our best content.
Right.
So we did that as soon as we could and kind of did a big reshaping of what the org was like, and it was beautiful and amazing to see.
So you were in the giving game.
We were kind of in the giving game,
yeah.
And it turned out to be, how can I say, enlightened giving, in the sense that it was in TED's huge long term interest.
Yeah,
and that's part of the delight of the moment, is that there isn't, I think, a contradiction between being generous in today's age and achieving something for your own long term good. Some people might see that as a contradiction. I don't think it is. I think that is the thrilling, wonderful fact of today's connected world, that it makes sense to be generous.
Yeah, it makes sense to be generous, and it's lasting happiness. Generosity makes you happier. So just speak to some of the facts behind the evidence behind that, please.
Right. So this is backed up by a lot of science. I mean, the biggest single thing was this giant Gallup survey that was done of like a couple hundred thousand people across the world, where they asked people a lot of things about their lives, including, did you give anything away to charity or to other causes in the last month? The people who did were on average as much happier than the people whose incomes had doubled. So that is crazy, right? Because most of us are obsessed with, if I could only make 20% more money, that would solve most of my problems. If you doubled your money, that's not quite like winning the lottery, but it's close. You can get, according to this Gallup survey, the same level of happiness by adopting a generosity spirit. And I just wish that was more widely known, because I think it's profoundly true. There are a lot of things that get in the way of people doing that. It's frightening to give in some ways. No one wants to let go. We have loss aversion. But people who do, especially who give thoughtfully, it transforms how you feel about yourself and about the world and about life.
Yeah, because if you could be forgiven, and we could all be forgiven because it's happened to all of us, if you double your money, you halve your problems. That sort of formula comes out of nowhere because it doesn't exist and it's not right.
No, it doubles your stress most likely as well.
Yeah, it does. And and adding is often something that we think is the way to solve things, and taking away is often the way.
Yeah.
It's also good for business, isn't it? It's also good for big business. And this has been proven as well.
So I think this is true in this age that we're in, that really every business could take a day out to brainstorm, what's our generosity strategy? Because most businesses are successful today only because of the people they have. Like the value that's created today is basically products of the human mind. And those people don't want to work for a company that is not contributing. It's not doing its fair part to contribute to the common good. So if you want to recruit great people, you need a great story. And the truth is, you can have an amazing story by giving away something, if you have a great asset that can be shared online, that may turn out to be the thing that helps you more than anything else, because suddenly millions of people know about you. It's that I think there are a bunch of risks that companies could take that it would amaze them what the response would be to those risks.
Yeah, and low risks.
I mean, in some ways, low risks. In some ways, not. I mean, someone might have knowledge that they view as commercially sensitive, but it's possible that if you created a free online course to share that knowledge, you know, you'd be giving it to competitors, but you'd also be putting a standard flag in the ground saying, we're the world leader in this. This is, you know, we believe in this. You would gain the reputation for being the wisest company in the world at Topic X.
Yeah.
And my guess is that your recruitment would more than make up for any commercial loss.
And there's that great phrase, isn't that there is energy in not clinging.
Yes.
And whatever this sort of IP is that you're talking about as an example of something that you could give or not give away, whenever you get to your own IP, you don't get there by clinging. You get there because you've got nothing to lose. And if you then change your attitude or your mindset to become a sort of Fort Knox of your own, whatever it may be, then that is a lock, not only on the content or what perceived value you have of something, but it also locks you in a stasis of movement. It stops you developing. And if you do give it away, it continues your flow and you get all the added energy and the benefit and the freedom of thought that goes with that.
I think that's profoundly true. There can be discomfort to it, by the way. Like, it doesn't always go super smoothly, but in that discomfort, usually something better emerges.
Yeah. I want to push people to the book. The book is fantastic. Talking to Chris Anderson about infectious generosity. Chris is the head of TED. He's the TED head. But also he's written this amazing book called The Ultimate Idea Worth Spreading. And it's very much standing on the shoulders of what TED stands for in the first place. In the book are amazing stories that you can pick up and put down whenever you want to. You don't have to. It's not a continuing narrative. So I want to highlight some of the great stories to give people a taste of what's in it. Because it's full of stuff like the mystery experiment. Tell us about that, Chris.
So there was a couple in the TED community who made some money and wanted to give it away. And so it was $2 million. And they wanted to learn something in giving it away. So
they made a lot more than that and chose to give $2 million away.
They made more than that and thought that they would like to give $2 million back somehow. So we brainstormed with them and came up with this idea for this thing we call the mystery experiment that was done in partnership with the university. And what happened was that we recruited people online to come and take part in a strange experiment that would be stressful, possibly life-changing. You know, a couple thousand people applied. 200 of them from lots of different countries, different income levels were chosen. And they got this email saying, well, hello, congratulations. We'd like to wire $10,000 into your PayPal account. No strings attached. They were like, yeah, right. but when we eventually persuaded them, something truly amazing happened. There was one string attached, which was that they had to tell us how they spent it. But that was literally the only thing.
There was another subdivision, wasn't there?
Right. So they were divided into two groups. One group had to report what they were spending on their social media channels, and the other was supposed to keep it secret. Surprisingly, there wasn't actually much difference in behavior between those two groups, which when you hear what the result is, it's possibly even more surprising, because what happened was that more than two-thirds of that money was basically spent generously, was given away to family, friends, strangers, causes of all kinds, more than two-thirds of it. Not what most economists would predict would happen. And so this was like a huge wow for me personally, for the researchers. They published two papers, there's a third coming about this. It's the biggest social psychology experiment around generosity of this type that's happened. And it just shows that we're wired to respond to generosity. We're a social species. Someone gives you something and you want to respond. And I spoke to a lot of the recipients and said, what on earth? Why did you do this? And they said, look, if I'd won the money in a lottery, I probably wouldn't. But because this money had been given to me, I felt seen. I wanted other people to be feel seen the way I'd been seen. It was the most beautiful thing.
Yeah, because the book's called Infectious Generosity, and you can infect other people with generosity, but you can also keep reinfecting yourself with the same seed.
Yes. Yeah.
You can become addicted to generosity.
In a beautiful way. I do warn people in the book, it's a dangerous book to read because you may get infected, but it is a beautiful infection, and hopefully you wish never to recover. I think the way you keep infecting yourself, maybe, is just through gratitude. There are so many things. When we take a minute to step back and think, to be grateful for the fact that we're alive now in this century and not when we're all covered in sores and, you know, with a black plague upon us or whatever, we get to live protected from the winter's chill. Yeah. That's amazing. That we have people we love, that we open our eyes and every day, if you look for it, you can see beauty. I mean, these are amazing things. And when you acknowledge them, it makes you want to give back in some way.
Yeah. And please read this book. So more amazing stories in the book. And there are not hundreds of them, but there's close to 100 of these stories. And they're all fascinating. They're so engaging. Tell us about the real Superman of Bogota.
The Superman of Bogota. Oh, well, so this mayor. So generosity. So I talk about him in the context of creativity. If you want kind things to go viral, insane levels of creativity are part of the mix. We're often just too cautious. So be creative. He was a politician who was amazingly creative. He did things like, you know, they would, like he filmed himself in the shower, for example, you know, showing how you could save water
by having shorter showers.
Yeah. I think that was the story. And they had all these sort of weird things in the streets. Like they would paint spots on the streets where accidents happened. They would recruit taxi drivers. Oh my goodness, I'm forgetting some
but
of these
he
stories.
He was generous with his creativity.
He was generous with his creativity.
And because he was doing it for the right reasons, he seemed to be gifted more creativity from somewhere, more originality.
He won support. So one of the things that they did was he offered people to add on to what they were paying in taxes generously. They could just do it and they would be recognized. Yeah. So this is a really powerful idea, that the amount of tax that people paid went up. And people were delighted by it. Like, imagine that. You know, a political stance that allows people to be joyful about the extra tax that they're paying. So, yeah, creativity is huge.
And again, once you sort of... It's a bit like taking the stabilizer off your bike. You know, if you crack a creative nut for the right reason, you then hear the language as it's being spoken to you on a daily basis, and you can start to download it from wherever it comes from, as long as you start then paying it forward and dishing it out.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Oh. Love music? Love interviews with lovely musicians? Search Virgin Radio UK on YouTube to find brilliant album specials with some of the shiniest lights on our playlist, including George Ezra.
It won't be like this forever, so just enjoy it while it's here. It's a really wonderful thing.
And James Bay.
It's about me. It's about my relationship with Lucy. It sums up so much of what went into writing this whole album. We're all works in progress. I still don't necessarily know who I am.
And Depeche Mode's Dave Gahan remembering the late, great Andy Fletcher.
I'll be honest with you, the first thought that came in my head was, I wish I'd been a bit kinder.
Watch all that and more at youtube.com/Virgin Radio UK.
Another beautiful part of the book is where you say, where Immanuel Kant was wrong, Joey from Friends was right. Speak to that if you don't mind.
So the philosopher Immanuel Kant was famous for saying, generosity is only real if it is done purely from moral reasons, sort of moral purity. If there's any other mixed motive in there, it's not really an act of altruism or kindness or generosity. And I used to agonize about this as a philosophy student, actually. Wait a sec. How can that be? Like people have some reason to do something, even if it's just like if I scratch my conscience feels better. That's a reason that benefits me. Does that mean that the act wasn't pure? And the truth is, I think he's just wrong on this. I think psychologists know that people act for so many different reasons. There is always a reason, and if we sort of get cynical about every act of generosity where there's something else in it for the person, we'll get excited about nothing, and we'll do nothing good ourselves. So I think, you know, in a way, generosity is always, even as it was taught to me, give and you shall receive. Well, hello, that's a promise that you get something back. So does that mean it's no longer moral that you give? Well, no, it doesn't, because giving is hard in the short term. It's always hard in the short term. But the fact that today you get back a bounty of things unlike we've ever had before in history because of our connectedness, you might end up with thousands of people around the world knowing about you and your work and wanting to help in some way. Your reputation is going to spread because of this. You are going to get happy because of this. These are reasons that should be celebrated, not snarked at. And I think if we just collectively decided to do that, instead of looking for the impure motives in each other, look for the pure motives and celebrate the rest as well. Because Chris, I feel like we're in this existential battle right now. There are these different narratives out there. A lot of what spreads online isn't kind or generous at all. It's horrible. You know, anger, disgust, division, mistrust, all these things are dividing, tearing us apart. And I think we're in an existential battle for the future of humanity, honestly. Like, we are in danger of hating each other so much that we won't be able to do anything together. We won't be able to solve any of the problems that we're facing, and we are facing huge problems. So the stories we tell each other about each other are crucial. And right now, one of the things that's gone horribly wrong with the internet is that social media algorithms are rewarding people who tell dark stories. It's the quickest way to get attention, is to say, ooh, big threat, big danger, look how horrible they are. Everyone goes, yeah, tell me more. Click, 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 click. And so they're the people who have become the loudest voices. And it's resulting in us just losing trust in each other. I think that's so dangerous.
I think to speak to what you just said there, I think we're in danger of fooling each other that we hate each other, not into hating each other.
I hope that's right. I hope that's
right.
Because
we don't, because it's not our natural state to hate each other. And also, when you get up in the morning to hate, you have to re-hate. You wake up. Most of us are very fortunate to wake up with, whether we realize it or not, with love in our hearts. And if you're angry about something, like if you have a row with your spouse, you have to remember to be angry again the next day, because you naturally don't want to be angry. There is a rage, not against the machine, or there's a rage, you know, you can be on the rage bus and just forget to get off it, if you like. Talking about celebratory people and people being celebrated for being generous, there is no better sort of poster person for that in the world than Mr. Beast. Now, for people who don't know who Mr. Beast is, because he's got this ironic name, which he came up with because he's really clever and he's such a student of his art now, which is YouTube. He's still only 25. His real name's Jimmy.
Yeah.
Tell everybody, give us again a mile high view of Mr. Beast, and then tell people what he does, why he does it. And, you know, to be generous or not to be generous, is that the question? Or is it how do you be generous or how not to be generous? Is that a better question?
Right. So Jimmy Donaldson decided, you know, like as a teenager, he was obsessed with YouTube and with a group of friends, fought hard to crack the code of what does it take to be successful on YouTube? How do you become a YouTube star? How do you get videos to go viral? And studied every aspect of it, from how you edit a video to the little picture you put up and the headline and so forth. And basically ended up attracting an ever bigger audience, even as a teenager. I think he... instead of college, whatever, he became this incredible...
Well, his mum thought he was going to college and he used to go and sneak off and stay in his car all day.
There you go.
Because she said, you either go to college or you leave home. So he had to pretend to go to college because he couldn't afford to leave home. And then when he could afford to leave home, he told his mum he hadn't been going to college, but don't worry, because he could now afford the rent elsewhere.
Exactly. So his success has been astonishing. I mean, he now has more than 200 million subscribers on YouTube. Yeah. So it's absolutely breathtaking. He puts up a video and within a week, it's typically seen by 50 million people. I mean, there is no terrestrial media channel, I don't think, that can match those numbers. And this is a guy with a few friends who's done this. Now, what he's discovered and what is beautiful and hopeful for the future is that he's not out there being a merchant of doom, like much of social media. He is out there celebrating the wild, the fantastic, the exciting, the amazing, and often the generous and the kind. He takes great delight in these amazing stories of, I mean, some of them are kind of, you know, these fantastical games that he'll put people through, but they're often, what he does is full of surprises. You know, he set up a car dealership so that people could come in and they'd see this amazing car and ask how much it was. And he'd say, well, it's $50. You know, it's yours. And they go, what? He said, no, it's yours. And he would just...
No, well, he'd say then, okay, 25. It's so funny, isn't it?
Exactly, it's funny. And then he's done videos like, hey, 1,000 people got their sight back through cataract surgery. Yeah, yeah. And these videos, you look at the people, you look at their reaction, and you can't help but be emotionally moved by it. Now, he has his critics, people who say, well, cataract surgery, hello, you're not addressing the underlying problem of public health inequity, or, you know, why only 1,000? Or, like, there's lots of ways in which people can snark. And it's true that there is an important role for system change and for all these other things. But I think two things. One is I've become convinced, just talking to the people around close to him, that he is the real deal. He is in his heart determined to do this for good, for the long term. He's making a fortune. He's plans to recycle it all. Two, it's done with respect for the people he's done. You know, there are some kindness videos that are out there where people get ambushed and something kind has happened.
About?
Yeah, and you can cross a line there and exploit people just for the views. I don't think that's how to view him. I think the main way to view him is that he is inspiring millions and millions of people in the next generation. He's especially popular among teenagers and even under 10.
My kids love him.
Yeah.
I love him. I actually love his videos. I really do. I think they're amazing.
They are amazing. He's teaching people that kindness can be cool.
Yeah. You know, kindness is cool. Jeez.
You know, now, what about that?
Because cool,
this is the fundamental problem that the rest of us have been wrestling with our whole lives, is that good is boring, evil is compelling.
Yeah.
This is down to our quirky human nature, the things that we're drawn to and pay attention to. Every artist has discovered this, every storyteller. And when it comes to the battle that we're fighting now for, if you like, the soul of humanity going for, like, I think it's a huge problem. But he is showing that actually there is a different way. And I think you can make quite a strong case that the generation coming through is sick already of the mean world that we are showing them.
I think you're completely right. And I think it's really patronizing of us to say, oh my goodness me, the kids are in peril. Yes, of course they are, to do with their young brains and their impressionability and the neuroplasticity. But hang on a minute. You know, they also are more armed with what it would take to see the problem more clearly, less insecurely and fearfully, and do something about it. And if he's leading the charge, I think that's more than all right. You talk about, once again, just got to tell you, Chris Anderson is who we're talking about his book, Infectious Generosity. Chris is that also happens to side hustle, head of Ted Head. loads of great stories. Mr. Beast is one of them. Tell us about Jeff Bezos's ex-wife. She's in there as well. She makes the cut.
Yes. Mackenzie Scott. So Jeff and Mackenzie got divorced a few years ago. She was given owed in that settlement like $60 billion.
Right.
And she amazingly pledged to give it all away, and to do it without the way that philanthropy is normally requires of people who receive the money. Normally people are put through this incredibly painful process of endless meetings, grant applications, bureaucracy, check, check, check.
It's micro-investigation.
You know, normally someone like her might hire a huge family office and, you know, make it... She decided to give away the money with as few strings attached as possible, to use her judgment on who was doing something that mattered, and then just write them a big check. And she's... The pace at which she's given money away is unmatched by any of the very rich. I mean, I've got to spend time with Mackenzie. She's just an extraordinary human being, and she's deadly serious about doing this. And I know of more than a dozen organizations who've been transformed by her generosity. And it's beautiful to see. It's really, really beautiful to see. And one interesting thing about her is, you know, like we normally say, oh, generosity has to be done anonymously. She's the most modest person you could imagine. She won't take the limelight. She won't do big public interviews or anything like that. But she wants the organizations to be known. She knows that the fact that she's given money to them helps inspire other people to give, helps the organizations themselves gain traction. So she's willing to let that fact be known. And it's another example of how the rules have changed in the age that we're in. It's okay for acts of generosity to be known. It really is.
The book is in three parts, and the jam and the sandwich is part two. How? Everyone can play a part. Six ways to give that aren't about money. Attention, bridging, knowledge, connection, hospitality, enchantment. Catalysts of contagion. How to shift generosity from invisible to viral. Pass it on. How infectious generosity depends on the stories we tell. And what about money? How to move beyond impulse giving. It is amazing. I love everything about the book. I love the synopsis at the back. I love the letter you write to us, a heartfelt open letter at the end of a book you've also happened to have written. I love what your friend said, because he read a draft of your book, one of the first drafts of your book, and he came back with the simple comment, what is the most generous version of everything I do? I'm going to think about that. Whether it's opening the door for someone, whether it's how I exist at work, whether it's how I'm with my wife, whether it's how I make my bed, whether it's what I do with my spare time, how am I to myself? What is the most generous version of everything I can do? That's a very useful question, one that's so useful it clearly struck a chord with you because you put it in your book.
Yeah, it did move me, and it challenged me actually, because the thing about that is that generosity mindset is essential to do any generous act. What he's saying there is that he's looking for that generosity mindset. Normally, Chris, we kind of sleepwalk through our day, most of us. Like, we're in, you know, our instinctive selves carries us through. We walk, you know, commute to work, whatever, we're obsessed on what we're doing. And we don't have time, we don't have cycles, we don't have to think about other things. The first act of generosity is finding somehow that willingness to shift attention to something outside ourselves. And that's what he's saying is, I found myself wanting to spend attention, just thinking, is there just a slightly more generous way I could be? And what he says is that, so, you know, he's in a supermarket and instead of just going through and paying, he'll stop and smile and thank the person he's paying. Yeah. You know, just things like that change that person's day, change your day. And they're actually really small and easy to do and make you feel a little bit happier. We find it shockingly hard to do.
Well, it's a little bit happier, sometimes a lot happier, but whether it's a lot or a little bit, it's happiness that lasts longer, because this kind of generous satisfaction is what you regard, you state as being resistant towards hedonic adaptation. And again, the science behind that, isn't there?
Yeah, there is. So everyone listening to this will know that when we acquire stuff, you know, we get excited about it. Here's some great new toy or even a car or, you know, whatever it is. We get very excited about it for a bit. A few months later, it's just part of our lives, and you know, we don't, yeah, and it's sort of, do we get joy from it? It's just, we don't, you know, and it's a really, really annoying fact about us that our brains are never satisfied. Yeah. You know, we want more. The other kind of happiness, though, from giving, it seems to be significantly longer lasting. Like, people who give money away, they just, any kind
time,
of generosity,
energy.
Yeah, any of those things, it goes deeper, because it's not just a sort of scratching of material satisfaction, it's your reflective self saying, oh, I like this version of myself, there's an element of pride, of delight, I can be this person, and it stays with you, it changes your self-esteem in a way. It's like,
well, it's a change of energy, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah.
You can look at yourself in the mirror, metaphorically or really, when you're in this state, and you feel the energy coming from you, as opposed to you trying to grab it from elsewhere and bring it towards you. And yeah, it's a definite for me, it's a simple plus or a minus. You're either, it's either positive energy going out, or it's minus energy trying to cling on to things or grab things from elsewhere, trying to consume some kind of satisfaction, trying to take as opposed to give. Mm. And there's that lovely bit you talk about at the beginning of the book. Are you a net giver or are you a net taker?
Right. So I think that's a powerful question, honestly, like, because there are so many different kinds of generosity and we all get very confused about different aspects in our life. Ultimately, what links them all is that question, am I, when you take everything into account, no one's perfect. No one's perfect. We all consume at part of the planet's bounty. We all have done things that we're not proud of. Am I a net giver or a net taker? Because if, on average, all humans were net givers rather than net takers, we're going to be just fine. We're going to be just fine.
It's so true. It's so true. I am a net taker. I'm a net taker. I've got to be a net taker.
I would challenge that, actually, because I was thinking about infectious generosity coming in and thinking about what you do. I mean, you've got an amazing platform. You're very lucky. But I mean, millions of people in Britain wake up feeling crap and then they listen to you and feel less crap. And you are spreading delight and laughter and just a form of joy to a lot of people every damn day you're on the air. That makes you a massive net giver.
I'm getting paid for it.
That's okay.
Is that okay?
That's okay. But so doing meaningful work, I think, is one of the most important things. And if you are working for a company that you believe in, that is a huge gift, and you should get a lot of joy from that. If you're working for one that you don't believe in, that you think is not, you know, you're spending most of your waking hours doing something that isn't net giving. So your choices there are if you can find different work, but actually companies can be nudged, can be changed by quite a small group of employees.
Oh, we're nudging. Don't worry about that.
Quite a small group of employees can make a huge difference.
And by the way, happy to be nudged. They're happy to be nudged, which is great. So I know you mentioned Thich Nhat Hanh in the book. So talking about right livelihood there. So there's the Eightfold Path if you're interested, which is right perspective, right thought, right speech, right action, right livelihood, right diligence, right mindfulness, and right consciousness and concentration. And then you get into that. Could talk to you on one. Vass had loads of questions for you. Sorry, Vass, completely hogged the interview. Do apologise. It's in a bit of flow there. Yeah. Don't think you mind. Chris, we're out of time. Anything else you'd like to say?
No, just thank you for this and for what you do. Oh, but I will say one other thing. There's an AI. If you want to play with an AI, there's an AI you can play with. It's at infectiousgenerosity.org. It will help you brainstorm how you can do your infectious generosity thing. So it's really fun. It's
how
really
many people
fun.
Work for TED?
200.
200 people work for TED, and they create all that sharing of ideas and sharing of inspiration. Are you allowed to say which are your top three TED talks? Not officially in your own opinion, or are all your children are your favourites?
I'll never forget Sir Ken and for the ripple effects from that original talk back in the day that continues to spread. So if you haven't seen that one, you should definitely see that one. There's for anyone who's interested in this topic, there's a beautiful talk by someone called Sarah Lomelin on giving circles and how actually anyone can create a little circle of friends and figure out how what you want to do with that. That's really a beautiful talk.
That's what Mr. Beast did.
And
TEDx, you know, big up TEDx, long live TEDx, responsible for breakouts brilliance such as Brené Brown and various other people.
Exactly.
What's the next 12 months look like for you?
Well, TED continues to, you know, we're trying to be brave in this sort of very complicated media age. We've got a new conference coming out called TED Next. So
nice.
You know, next generation, new formats, all those kinds of things. That'll be happening in October. I'm obviously thinking about other ways to spread generosity. Especially among, I'm trying to persuade some of the very rich to do a lot more with their money. You know, yeah. rather than snark at them, I think there's a big opportunity to try and encourage them just to dream bigger and
build the golden bridge and invite them to meet you there.
Something like that.
Yeah. All right. Great to see you.
All right. Great to see you, Chris.
Give my love to Jacqueline, and by the way, I'm a big fan of.
Oh, thank you. I'm a lucky man. Yeah.
All right. Thank you so much.
Craving some great 80s music? Play Virgin Radio 80s Plus. I want your love. On DAB Digital Radio, on the app, on your smart speaker, and at virginradio80splus.co.uk. I got my mind set. Even if we're just dancing in the dark. Love Chris Evans. Woo! Love the 80s. Virgin Radio. 80s Plus.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.